What is up? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about trades, Kyle Kuzma, 12-game losing streaks, a lot of Wizards stuff. But we're going to start the show with some news on Jimmy Butler. I want to talk about how the Wizards could potentially be a facilitator as a third team and what that deal and that structure would kind of look like, why Washington might want to jump in to help facilitate a deal like that, why it might mean taking it back, a familiar face, talk about that. But I also want to talk about Wizard-centric stuff. You know, Kyle Kuzma's trade outlook. I tweeted the other day, I don't think that Washington can get a first-round pick anymore. I want to talk about, you know, some trade packages that I could see for Kuzma at the deadline. Valanciunas is another guy I want to examine his trade outlook. Brogdon as well. I want to touch on this 12-game losing streak because it's bad. It's getting up there with the territory of the 17-game one at the beginning of the year. So I want to touch on that stuff. But the lead for today's show is Jimmy Butler. I felt like, you know, Jimmy Butler has been the talk of the town in the NBA ever since that, 7-game suspension that Miami gave him a couple weeks back. He just got suspended the other day for 2 more games for, I think, missing a team flight, conduct detrimental to the team. That ship has sailed. Jimmy Butler, one way or the other, will not be in a Miami Heat uniform most likely by February 6th, which is the deadline. It's no secret that the team that he wants to go to is the Phoenix Suns, a team that Wizards fans, I'm sure you're familiar with, being that that's who Washington traded Bradley Beal to. And what's funny about this whole Jimmy Butler saga is it's pretty clear that the Suns want Jimmy Butler. It's pretty clear that Jimmy Butler wants the Suns. And what's perfectly clear between those two is that Phoenix has to trade one of its big three to get him. And they're not trading Kevin Durant. They're not trading Devin Booker. So who are they going to trade? That's former Wizard Bradley Beal, who Washington sent to them just 20 months ago in June of 2023 for whatever the haul that they got for him. Whether you like the haul or not, it was the fact that they moved Bradley Beal to Phoenix. Phoenix went all in. They traded 6 second-round picks, you know, pick swaps, anything that they could find that they still had for Beal. And it seems like even if a Jimmy Butler deal doesn't get across the finish line and Bradley Beal remains a Sun, the fact that they are open to trading him, looking to move him to bring in a third star that would actually work, that kind of tells you all you need to know about why Washington completely fleeced that trade. And that's not to say that Washington got the bevy of assets that it should have gotten originally for Beal, because they didn't. But for what they had and what they could work with, the no trade clause, the contract, everything involved, to get what they got for him and to see how Washington's kind of set up to tank and rebuild now, and Phoenix is already looking to move off of Beal, not even 2 years after the fact, without a playoff win, by the way, to their name with Beal there. It kind of shows you know, Washington won that deal pretty clearly. And so what I've seen in reporting is that it's tough for Miami and Phoenix to get a trade done. I mean, Miami doesn't want Beal. They made that clear when Washington put him available and he wanted to go there. And the Heat were like, no, we don't want him. And so the reporting is that Miami doesn't want him. I'm sure Brad would remove the no trade clause for Miami. That's pretty known, but I'm not sure Miami wants Brad, but that would have to work if it was going to be like a Butler for Beal swap and Phoenix gives that extra first round pick they just acquired and some seconds and other stuff to Miami to kind of facilitate that deal. But what you also got to think about is, like, from Phoenix's perspective, Butler's on the last year of his deal. I think it's a team option that I doubt will get picked up, or maybe it's a player option. I'm not sure. I think it's a player option, actually. But at the same time, you have a team like Phoenix that's like, well, Miami, you're kind of not that good. You're in the play-in realm of the Eastern Conference. Jimmy Butler clearly doesn't want to play for you. And if you force him to play, he's really not going to try because he doesn't want to be there. You're kind of in a tough spot too. So maybe I'll just call your bluff. So what I think needs to happen is there needs to be a third team, maybe a fourth or fifth team, to facilitate some sort of trade here. And I think a team like the Wizards, you know, rebuilding teams tend to be the facilitators of moves, taking on bad contracts in exchange for you know, picks and young players. And that can kind of move the needle for some of these teams that might not want those contracts in these deals. Washington can afford to take on, you know, expiring deals, maybe deals that still have this year and a following year after that. And I think getting in on this move would be only beneficial to the Wizards. I mean, they maybe have to pay, you know, bad salary the rest of this season and then the following year, and then they're off the hook and acquired, you know, some really good draft capital that they could use. They could still buy those guys out as well. So what I did is I went into the trade machine. I've been on this for a while now, these last couple weeks. It took me a good amount of time to figure out a deal that would work between Miami, Washington, and Phoenix to get everybody what they wanted and where they wanted to go. And so just hear me out here. This is not, by the way, this isn't the only way a deal can get done. I've seen Milwaukee be in certain deals where Middleton goes someplace and Beal goes to the Bucks because the Heat maybe don't want him. The Wizards just take on bloated salaries. But it's so hard because like the new CBA is already complex and like I still don't understand it. But it's like a team can't send out a player in exchange for two players that make his salary and bring them back if they're like a second apron team. I hope I explained that the right way. So for instance, like Milwaukee's a second apron team. They can't trade Bobby Portis and Chris Middleton, who equate to around 40 something million, in exchange for Bradley Beal. You can't really do like a 2-for-1 swap technically. So that made it a little difficult with Milwaukee per se. But the deal that I found was the simplest I could mold. It was a 3-team deal between Washington, Miami, and Phoenix. And the deal reads like this. The Phoenix Suns get Jimmy Butler. That's who they wanted. Jimmy Butler wanted them. They don't really want additional players or depth or picks or whatever. They want Jimmy Butler. And that's all they get in this deal. I think they'd come away happy. The Miami Heat get Bradley Beal, Kyle Kuzma, and Malcolm Brogdon, plus a 2026 second round pick from Phoenix that's via Denver. So in terms of Miami, they take on Beal, and maybe they didn't necessarily want Beal, but they said, look, we still kind of have a window where maybe we can compete. Jimmy Butler obviously isn't on a great deal right now, but we can kind of swap those two. Butler's clearly better than Beal, but you never know what Beal could be in a Miami system. You never know how much they can get out of players. So they get Bradley Beal. They also, from Washington, get Kyle Kuzma and Malcolm Brogdon. So they're still getting talent, and they're still getting good depth. And basically, if you ask Miami if they do this trade for Jimmy and Beal straight up, I don't think they'd do it. But they're at a crossroads. They kind of just got to get rid of Jimmy Butler, and they bring back those guys. And I'll circle back to Miami because I don't know if this is the best move for them in terms of the future, but I'll circle back to that in a second. For Washington, and I know this is what you guys are all here for, in exchange for giving up Kyle Kuzma and Malcolm Brogdon, they get Terry Rozier, Duncan Robinson, Josh Richardson, Keshawn Johnson, Phoenix's 2031 first-round pick that they just acquired from Utah, and a 2031 Phoenix second-round pick. In terms of Washington, I understand that's a lot of bloated salaries that they might not want. For just some background, Rozier is making $25 million this year and is on to make the same amount, I'm pretty sure, the following year, and then his contract's done. Same for Duncan Robinson, making roughly $20 million this year and the following year, and then he's a free agent. Josh Richardson, expiring $3 million deal. Keshawn Johnson, $700K, young player, making no money. You never know what you can get. But there was about $46,000 roughly that needed to be made up, so he's the cheapest option. I don't think that he would be too attached. And then obviously the draft capital is why you're here. You could never really get anything more than a second or maybe 2 seconds for Malcolm Brogdon. You basically get 1 second round pick and some salary filler. Same with Kyle Kuzma. You get a first round pick finally for Kyle Kuzma's efforts and for what he's, I guess, the value he's got. I don't think you can get a first, but I think parlaying Brogdon and parlaying Kuzma, and the fact that it's not from the team that they're getting traded to, it's from the Suns to basically say, hey, thank you, Washington, for being a facilitator in this deal, for your hard work and helping us make this work. We're going to give you that first round pick. Because I think that's why they're acquiring that first round pick, is to, you know, send it to a tanking team to facilitate them taking on these bloated contracts. Now, as for Miami, why would they do this deal? If I'm Pat Riley, I don't know if I want this deal. But again, I don't know if I get to pick and choose at this point because the Jimmy Butler thing is so bad. I don't even know if I want it. I don't even know if I want him sticking around the team. Maybe I just want to take whatever I can get. Now, here's the kicker. What Miami could do is they could be like, look, maybe if Jimmy Butler was so unhappy, have him play out the season, maybe bench him. Don't play him, don't make a trade, and just basically sit there and say, we know that you're not going to come back on this player option. Call his bluff, basically. Let that contract expire, and then you got $50 million in cap space to work with to add another guy to Bam and to Hero and to whoever you get. But look, in terms of right now, if you ask me, would you rather have Bradley Beal, Kyle Kuzma, and Malcolm Brogdon, or Josh Richardson, Duncan Robinson, and Terry Rozier? I think you just upgraded at every single position. Every single one. I mean, Beal's way better than Terry Rozier, who barely plays, by the way, because he's always hurt. Duncan Robinson sucks. He's a liability on both ends. I know that he really don't like playing him. And not saying Kyle Kuzma's all world, but he's so much better than Robinson. And then Malcolm Brogdon's a really serviceable player that would definitely get minutes over a guy like Richardson, who rarely plays. And then Keshawn Johnson's a throw-in. So if the Miami Heat are like, look, we kind of maybe want to make this work with Beal and think he would fit well with Bam and fit well with Hero, then sure. But this is the move. I think it's a great trade for the Suns. The Suns get exactly what they want. The Washington Wizards get a first-round pick for Kyle Kuzma slash Brogdon and another second, and then basically some expiring salary, some poor contracts, but they can make it work. So I think both those teams win this deal. And then you look at the Heat. It's just a matter of how they want to play this. Do they want Butler to just become a free agent if he declines the option after the year, and then we get to use that $50 million how we want? Or maybe, you know, they're like, you know what, we do want Beal, and we can get Kuzma for another year after this, another 2 years, sorry, after this. Malcolm Brogdon, expiring salary, still opens up another $20 million for us next year. Pick up a second-round pick we can maybe use in a trade. I think if this is the route they want to go, that makes sense. But again, I don't think it's the best route. I don't know if Jimmy's going to accept the player option or not, but I think it would probably be better for Miami to just say, we're not going to trade you, Jimmy. You won't play for us the rest of the year. Call it a lost season. And then regroup next year when he declines the option. But this is what I had. I'm curious to see what your thoughts are. This is not easy. It's not easy to trade two guys that are making nearly $50 million a year. You need a third team. And look, I've seen the Bucks trades and stuff, but that stuff's just difficult for me, at least to facilitate. And I should add, this is all based on reporting from Vince Goodwill of Yahoo Sports. This is a direct excerpt from one of his articles. It says, quote, there have been whispers of the Washington Wizards and Toronto Raptors getting involved as well, but it seems the momentum is geared toward this getting done very soon, perhaps in the next few days. Detroit and Charlotte could also operate as facilitators for a large deal too, sources told Yahoo Sports, end quote. So basically, Vince is coming out here and saying, these are four of the worst teams in the league. Well, not Detroit, but they still maybe want to take on some bloated salary because maybe they can. But I would say mostly, you know, Charlotte, Washington, and Toronto. These are the teams that he says could facilitate a deal. In terms of Toronto, like I get that, but like Toronto's not tanking. Like they have Scottie Barnes and RJ Barrett and Quickley and like Poeltl. They have big guys on big contracts. It's not like the Wizards where, you know, Poole makes 30, Kuz makes 20, and then everyone else apart from like Kispert and maybe Holmes really don't make much. And so they can afford to take on some bloated salary. They have salary to swap, whereas for Toronto, I don't know if they're necessarily looking to trade any of their big salary guys. So I think it's really Washington, maybe Charlotte gets involved, but Charlotte just made a deal for Nick Richards with the Suns, so I don't know how much they're still looking to do. But again, if this is what the deal is, you know, I think it works out for two of the three parties and maybe three of three if Miami really wants Beal. Again, before I move on, this is the full deal. Phoenix gets Jimmy Butler. Miami gets Bradley Beal, Kyle Kuzma, Malcolm Brogdon, and Phoenix's 2026 second-round pick via Denver. The Wizards get Terry Rozier, Duncan Robinson, Josh Richardson, Keshaw Johnson, Phoenix's 2031 unprotected first, and Phoenix's 2031 second-round pick. Let me know your thoughts. It's a big trade. I'm going to post this to Twitter and see what people think about it. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of great comments, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of hate comments, but that's the fun part of trade season. You got some people that love it, and some people that think you're an idiot because you made the trade. So, you know, I'm curious to see what you guys think. Obviously, send me a DM, give me a comment on the pod link, whatever you think about that deal, who wins, who loses, etc. That's some Jimmy Butler news. I know you're here for some Wizard-centric stuff, and we're going to talk about that later in the show. But the first thing that I want to talk about while we're on the topic of trades is Kyle Kuzma's trade value, which honestly doesn't exist anymore. It's done. It's dead. It's buried in the ground. It's over. Kyle Kuzma that could get two first-round picks in 2022 is no longer a thing. That is molded into a Kyle Kuzma who's enjoying one of the worst seasons of his career. I'm pretty sure it's the worst season, maybe shooting, like numbers-wise, efficiency-wise. But I know it's his worst season since he was in LA. It's his worst season as a Wizard by far, which obviously you never like to see. You always want to see guys progressing and getting better. But it's just it's what's happening. He's been woefully inconsistent this season. He's averaging 14 points, which is 8 less than the year before, 7 less than that the year before that, and is the first time that he hasn't increased his points total since 2020-2021, when he was a third, fourth, fifth option for the Lakers, averaging 13 a game. In terms of his three-point percentage, 25.9% is by far the lowest. It's 5 points lower than his previous career worst. So that's pretty brutal. Look at his field goal percentage, 42% from the field. Hasn't shot that bad in his career, ever. Even as a rookie, he shot 45%. He's shooting 42% now on 13.3 shots per game, making one of every 4.5 three-point attempts. It's just not what it needs to be. And I mean, what the story is, I mean, look at his free throw percentage, 58.7%. Those are fucking, like, sorry, excuse my language. Those are DeAndre Jordan numbers. Like, he's just laying brick after brick after brick at the free throw line. It's just, it shows that, like, 20 percentage point drop in your free throw percentage, the worst shooting numbers of your career. And I just go back to the fact that he showed up out of shape. Point blank, he showed up to training camp, showed up to the preseason, looked like he was slow, out of shape, lethargic, rusty, whatever you want to call it, whatever adjectives you want to use. Kyle Kuzma was not prepared. He was not ready physically, whatever you want to call it. He didn't look that way. Again, I got to always preface, like, I'm not there. I don't know what he did in the offseason to train. But from the untrained eye, and when you ask any Wizards fan if you thought he looked in shape or not, he didn't look in shape. He looked slow. He looked tired. He didn't look like he had his head in it. And that's disappointing to see from the guy that claimed to be a number one option and was the leader of this team and wanted to see it turned around in D.C. Everyone knew that was BS. Everyone knew Kyle Kuzma wasn't going to be here for the long haul. Kyle Kuzma knew that. And he kept saying that he wanted to do this and he was going to be the guy that turns it around here. But I think the writing has kind of been on that wall for a bit now, in terms of, like, okay, I'm going to be elsewhere. And you can kind of see that this season, because the effort level isn't there. He looks checked out of a lot of games. He looks slow. He looks tired. He just doesn't look right. He doesn't look like a guy that really cares all that much. And fans, when you got to watch this team on a 17-game losing streak earlier in the season, you got to watch them on a 12-game losing streak right now. They're uncompetitive. They're really not in the game's really over from the jump, basically. And you got to sit there and say, wow, we've lost 12 games in a row and we're throwing out the same starting five. We're throwing out guys like Kyle Kuzma, who have been very inefficient or averaging the worst totals of their career. Don't look like they really care about wins and losses, but we got young guys on the bench that really want to play well. We got Keyshawn George that we think could be that Kyle Kuzma that was the old of 2023, 2022. We have him waiting on the bench, not playing as many minutes as he probably should. Maybe give his minutes, him starting minutes, and move Kuz to the bench. Maybe play some other guys like Bob Carrington and guys like Jared Butler and Justin Champagne, who've earned the role, versus guys like Kyle Kuzma that have kind of played their way out of it if they were in any other situation. And so that's inherently frustrating to see. You got Kyle Kuzma over his last three games. Let me pull it up. I tweeted this out last night. He is shooting 11 of 40 from the field, which is like, what, 25.8%, 26% from the field. He's shooting 21% from three on 12 attempts. That's 2 of 11 or 2 of 12. He is a combined minus 45 or plus minus over the last three games. All losses, by the way. Obviously, they lost 12 in a row. And last night against the Clippers, 7 points on 3 of 12 from the field and a team worst minus 25 plus minus. I'll read it again. You did not hear that wrong. 7 points, 3 of 12 from the field, team worst minus 25. And that's from the guy that said he was the number one option. That's from a guy that claims to be the leader of this team. He's not. He's nothing like that. He has single-handedly tanked his trade value to the point where I tweeted the other day, there's just no way that the Wizards can get a first-round pick for him. I tried. I mean, I was in class. I was supposed to be paying attention. But I was so focused on how can the Wizards even get a first-round pick? Because I was looking at contenders that could use a four. I was looking at contenders that can use a guy that can maybe knock down a three here or there, be some sixth-man bench depth for them at a valued contract. And even on the descending value deal, even on a team-friendly deal, I didn't think any of these teams, putting myself in their shoes, would want to send out a first-round pick for a guy like this. And I understand it's a bigger role in Washington. Most defenses are facilitating to him and making him beat them, whether it's one-on-one or if they're sending help and making others beat them. But Kyle Kuzma has been terrible. Point blank, no questions about it. Not going to sugarcoat it. He's been absolutely awful. From a leadership standpoint, in terms of being the top guy on this team, he hasn't brought it night in, night out. He's been inconsistent. He's been inefficient. He's been terrible. And to think that you can get a first-round pick is just delusional. And I'm not going to sit here and say that you should have traded him last year, because I know a lot of people don't, but I respect Winger and Dawkins saying, hey, we're looking to move you. What do you think about this deal? Because I know they're trying to establish a culture and a foundation, and they're trying to do right by their players. And look, I get that and all, but at the same time, you could have gotten a first-round pick for him. You eventually got one for Gafford, but maybe you could have got another first-round pick for Gafford. Sometimes it's not the right decision to do that. Sometimes you got to do what's best for yourself. It's a business, and players will understand that. So obviously, hindsight's 20/20. The Wizards didn't think Kyle Kuzma would fall off this bad, but he has. He's been awful. And honestly, when you think about it, I think against the Clippers, he was maybe the Wizards' worst player. Like, shot them out of the game, turned the ball over, wasn't good on defense at all. Honestly, the last couple games, I think he's probably been the worst player on the team. The player that's hurt them the most. And so, again, why would you want to trade a first-round pick for that when you're in a title hunt? I don't think you would. And so I don't think the Wizards can get a first-round pick. What I do think that they could get is salary filler, expiring deals, that means. Maybe a young player and maybe a second-round pick or two. Which is a pretty bleak outlook, considering this is a guy that could warrant two first-round picks. But the Wizards should be used to this, because Bradley Beal could have gotten four picks and four pick swaps, but they ended up trading him for second-round picks and expiring deals. And so that's just what happens when you wait a little too long and you don't capitalize on their value. I mean, look at Daniel Gafford. He's been great this season, but the Wizards knew he wasn't a part of the plan. And they didn't just wait for him to keep getting better and better before they can move him. They said, a first-round pick's what we're going to get. It's the best we're going to do. He's playing really well. Let's move him. You get Keyshawn George, and you kind of move on. And the Wizards probably could have benefited from that with Kuz. They didn't. You got to work with what you got. And it sucks to admit that, but the best teams do it are the ones that can admit that. They can admit their mistakes. They can rectify them. They can get whatever they can get. They did that with Beal. They did it with Porzingis. And I think they'll do it again with Kuzma. This is the deal. I think Sacramento makes sense for Kyle. It's a team that almost traded for him a couple years ago before the Rush trade happened and Kuz was rerouted to Washington. But they're a team that I think, has won a couple games. They're right in the hunt in the West. And I think they could benefit from a guy like Kuz that could help their offense a little bit. Maybe off the bench as well, because they still have DeRozan and they have Keegan Murray. But they have the contracts to make it work. And I think Kuz off the bench will be a better option than some of the other pieces they have. So this is the deal. Kyle Kuzma gets traded to the Sacramento Kings. And in return, Washington receives Kevin Huerter, Colby Jones, and a 2029 second-round pick. And look, I understand what you're thinking. Greg, what is that? That's absolute garbage. The Wizards should basically would be better off just keeping Kyle Kuzma and hoping he turns it around. And I get that perspective. I really do. But it's not just the principle of getting assets for him. It's the principle of opening up that playing time. It's the principle of getting him off the team, because I don't know what people around him think, but I know fans are kind of souring on him. And I think that's the best part about it. So Kevin Huerter, he's making 16.8 this year, relatively the same the following year. So obviously you're going to have to pay him next year to be on your team, but taking teams do that all the time to take out contracts. Colby Jones, $2.1 million. He's only in his second year. He's a great guy that I know. My guy Matt Moderno loved him out of Xavier. I had him with the top 20 grade. I think he was a second round pick, but I think Colby Jones has some upside. I don't think he's going to be an all-star, but I think it's a nice player to throw in the deal to make it work. And then the 2029 second, you're just stacking second round picks, whether you want to use them when you start to contend to bring on some best extra pieces. Whether you want to look for the next Nikola Jokic in the second round, the next Isaiah Thomas in the second round, Draymond Green, you could use that too. But I think it's time for Washington to realize that they messed up not moving him last year. And I think it's time to move on from him now because you don't want to let this stuff linger. It's always possible that he could play really well, build up that value, and you can move him next year. But again, I think time is now to deal him, and I think that's one of the better deals you're going to get. I think a team like Memphis makes sense too. I think they have a spot at the four, but that would warrant them moving Marcus Smart, and I don't know. I think I'd rather have Marcus Smart than Kyle Kuzma. So I think Sacramento makes sense. I'm not sure if there's any other teams that could take him on, but that's kind of where we're at with the Kuzma sweepstakes. You know, his trade value is in the tank. It's terrible. And so that's kind of the outlook there. Very bleak, but that's the reality. And the Wizards, I think, would be smart to realize the reality and work with it rather than, you know, work against it and just keep him and be a little bit stubborn there like they were last season with him and Tyus and all that. I do want to touch on Bilal Coulibaly for a bit because it's been concerning, his shooting numbers, especially from three. Teams just kind of go under him. They go under screens and they're just kind of letting him shoot. And sometimes he'll take them, and most of the time he doesn't. But it just it hurts his overall game because he can't take that with a pump fake off the dribble now. It makes a lot of things harder than they have to be for Bilal. In the month of December, he is shooting 17.9% from three. And it's not like he's barely shooting them. He's taking around 3.5 per game. So, you know, not great. And you factor in only 38% from the field on 9 shots. That's not good either. But again, he's got time. You know, he's still young and he's not really known as a 3-point shooter, but that's an element of his game that he has to figure out because teams are going under him and it takes away a lot of what he does great, which is maybe using that jumper to get into the paint, finishing at the rim, which I think he's done a better job of lately. These last two games in LA, he's been great. 17 points, leading score on 7 of 15 from the field against the Lakers, 6 boards, 4 assists. He was great. But again, four turnovers the last two games, only 1 of 5 from three, 1 of 7 from three against the Clippers. And while he added 15 points and 5 boards against them, still shot 38% from the field, 1 of 7 from three. That's a combined 2 of 12 over his last two games. When you look at the last 5 games, he's shooting a combined 2 of 22 from three. So it's not falling and it's not the end of the world for him because he's only 20. And he's impacting the games in other ways too, but that's one thing. He's had some really bad turnovers as well, getting caught in the air. So again, not what you want to see, this type of shooting regression from Bilal Coulibaly this far into the season. You want to see him gradually improving. But the last two games he's scored and all that, I want to make sure fans don't just look at the box score because he is struggling. Just because he has 32 points over the last two doesn't mean that he's been popping off by any means. You like to see those numbers get up. So that's Bilal. I was on the Bullets Forever playback with my guy Kevin Broom the other day, and he gave me a fascinating stat. The Wizards have drawn only 8 total charges through 43 games this year, which is crazy. I'm sure there's multiple teams in the league that have guys that have drawn double-digit charges themselves. I think that shows a lack of buy-in. I think it shows a lack of defensive IQ in terms of being in the right spot at the right time, maybe poor coaching in terms of defensive end, not knowing where to be. And so not the end of the world, but it's just a stat that kind of like when you've lost 12 in a row and you're 6-37, it's just another thing that people can add to the mockery. You've only drawn 8 charges really in 43 games. And you know who funny enough leads the team in charges, as Kevin told me, is Kyle Kuzma with a whopping 0.13 charges drawn per game, which is unbelievable to think about. That's a real stat. He draws less than 0.15 charges per game and he leads the team. A mockery of sorts, kind of, you know, culminates how bad the Wizards have been on the defensive end in terms of that. So not great there. You get blown out in LA. I mean, this whole West Coast road trip has been a shit show. At Golden State, you really should have won that game if your coaching was better. If guys stepped up when they needed to, you had a great first half. and then it all kind of fell apart. You end up losing by 8, really bad fourth quarter. Sacramento, nowhere close. You got absolutely blitzed. So many bad turnovers and bad shots in that game. Only put up 100 points, lose by 23. The following night, LA, you're in it a little bit, but again, they're just dominating you on both ends. Really poor turnovers. You get blown out, end up losing by a whopping 23 points. And then the Clippers, man, you were down really big, really early, 39-20, halfway through the second quarter. Just one of the Clippers game was one of the worst, maybe the worst basketball games that I've watched this team play this year. So unprepared from the jump. And that falls on Brian Keefe. And that's a big part that I want to talk about. The comments of my post have been flooded with fire Brian Keefe. And I think that's a bad move in season, but at the end of the year, man, it's like, what have you done to impress me? Yeah, last year, and the team sucked when you took over, and that's not your fault, because that's how they're built, but again, you didn't see much improvement there. You factor in, you go into this season, it's the same problems that have been plaguing the team all year. Poor turnovers, bad defense, bad shot selection, and I granted, if they made some shots, some open shots like some other teams would make, this team would be a little bit closer in some games, but it's just it's non-competitive basketball. I mean, even when OKC kept losing games, like they were in it, they beat some teams they weren't supposed to. The Wizards haven't beaten a team that they weren't supposed to, apart from what, Denver. That was a big win, and even at that, there was no Aaron Gordon and no Jamal Murray. So at the same time, you beat Jokic, and he still dropped 56 on you. So it's just Brian Keefe has not been impressive. And I'm not saying he has to be impressive in terms of wins and losses, but the team's playing terrible basketball. Bad defense, really low IQ basketball, you know, a lot of turnovers, unforced errors, just things that haven't been cleaned up realistically at all this year. It's the same issues that are plaguing them. And, you know, when you have multiple 12-plus game losing streaks, and by the end of this, it's going to be 14-plus game losing streaks in the season, clearly, you're not doing enough to rectify these mistakes. You're not making the necessary in-game adjustments or pre-game, you know, game planning adjustments to try to find some new things. And you're playing the same starters, and it's just bad. And so, well, I don't think a move to a head coaching change should happen mid-season. I do think, you know, if the Wizards move on from Brian Keefe, I don't see why anybody would be opposed to that. I mean, he's not done anything, at least that I could see, that would warrant him staying here for another year. I think you could bring in another guy that maybe sticks this one out, because I think we all know Brian Keefe's not going to be the guy when the Wizards start to turn it on. I think it's pretty clear that it's going to be someone else. And so, you know, maybe just bite the bullet now, get rid of Keefe and you know, find that guy if he's available. I guess if not, hold on to him for another year. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Brian Keefe has had the best situation. I think he has the worst roster in the league. So not the easiest thing, but I think he's got a roster that's better than 6 wins at this point of the year. Again, not his fault, but I think he could do a lot better given the situation. So that's my assessment on Keith. Moving on to some other topics here to wrap up the show. Bilal Coulibaly scored his 1,000th point. That was cool against the Clippers. I do want to talk about, and I've talked about this a couple times when I've been discussing stuff on the pod, is the monumental sports coverage of the team. And I know this has been a big point of contention between a lot of Wizards fans, a lot of you guys that follow and listen to the show, because I know you've been DMing me about it. The stuff with Monumental, I'm on record talking about how I'm not a big fan of their biased coverage of the team. And I get it. Ted Leontis, owner of the Wizards, owns Monumental. Like, these guys that are doing the actual jobs, it's not their fault. It's probably from the top down. Like, look, if you're kind of talking bad about basically your boss's team, like you can't do that. And that's why there's an inherent morality, or not morality, but basically, like, there's something a bit off when the owner owns the broadcast rights as well, because you know you're not gonna get unbiased coverage. You know, you're not going to get, you know, bottom of the line, this is what needs to be done, this player's not good, this player's not good, because they're technically working for the same guy. They're all on the same team. And I think fans want unbiased coverage, and fans want, you know, their team sucks. They want some guy, some pundit on the post-game show to basically be like, Kyle Kuzma, man, what's going on? You are shooting the team out of games. You are not playing well. You came into the season out of shape and unprepared. You need to step it up and figure it out. I'm from New Jersey. People in you know, the Philly, NBC Sports Philly, do that all the time. they're not afraid to speak their mind. But with the Wizards, and I'm bringing this up again because, like I said, the Clippers loss was one of, if not the most embarrassing losses and results of the season. Performances, just the, everything went wrong. And so you would expect on any other postgame show them to kind of dig into the team, and you were unprepared, coach didn't have them prepared, this was like an abomination, anything like that. But the lead of the postgame show is they mentioned four things before they got into the actual show. Jonas Valanciunas had a double-double. Bilal scored his 1,000th point. Four or five starters scored in double figures. And Jordan Poole dropped 24 points on 4-3. So guess what? Who gives a fuck about anything that just happened? You lost by 17. It's your 12th straight loss. Okay? But guess what? Four of the five starters were in double digits. So, you know, give us a pat on the back for that one. No. No, no one wants to hear that. Talk to me about the bad. Talk to me about why they are struggling, what needs to be changed. I'm not here like I'm 5 years old for you to tell me what's going right when it's not. I'm not here to tell you to tell me that I need to stop being disappointed in the team because, oh, guess what? Jonas Valanciunas scored a double-double. I do not care. I don't. I don't care at all that he scored a double-double. I just want you to tell me what happened, and I want you to be real with me. And so I caught a glimpse of the postgame show. I didn't watch the rest of it because I didn't want to. I didn't want somebody to come on there and tell me that everything was good when it wasn't. But I did feel like I just wanted to mention that real quick. And again, I'm not saying that to say it's the people's fault that run the postgame show because I know they have a job to do. But I hate the concept. I hate the inherent concept of Monumental and Ted owning the postgame show because the postgame show used to be great. It did. But now it's just turned into this propaganda, you know, this is the Wizards, and while they are the worst team in the league, here's all the positives for you to look at. Just stop. All I want is for you to just be real with me. I think that's what most fans want, and I think that's been lost, and I think it needs to be regained. So that's just a comment I had there, and I always do this where I give an update on the NBA tank standings. I tweet this out every Tuesday just to give an update for Wizards fans on kind of where they stand. The standings were really close for a while, but shout out to the Wizards for sucking, and shout out to the Jazz and the Hornets and the Pelicans, realistically, even the Raptors, for stacking some wins. I mean, Toronto won at home against Boston, just won on the road at Atlanta. That's two in a row for them. Shout out to them. The Pelicans have won four in a row. They're getting healthy. I think they're kind of starting to move away from Washington. They also swept Washington early in the year, which was huge. You got a team like Utah that has stacked some wins. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games, have lost four in a row, but they've started to play well. They're up to double-digit wins. And then you got the Wizards, the lowly Wizards, sitting at 6-37 at the bottom of not just the Eastern Conference, but of the NBA by a full 4.5 games, which is huge in the grand scheme of things because obviously, the odds are against them, and anytime you go on Tankathon, the Washington Wizards get the fourth or fifth pick from the sim. But you want to at least set yourself up for it, for the best odds, the best opportunity. And I think that, you know, the Wizards, a win in this season would be obviously the young players playing well and all that, but they want to be the worst team, and they're pretty clearly going to be. I don't even know if they can get to double-digit wins the way they're playing. And so the fact that they're the last team to get there is huge. Charlotte, you know, Brandon Miller's out for the year, but they're up to 11 wins. They still have LaMelo. They still have Bridges. They still have a competent team. Mark Williams has been playing great. Brooklyn's lost five in a row. Philadelphia's lost seven, but I'm not too concerned about them because they have 14-15 wins, and I doubt the Wizards get anywhere close to that win total. And so you look at a team like Washington, they're going to pick up some wins here and there when they play some of these teams in the bottom. Some of these middle-of-the-pack teams maybe they can even beat. But they're pretty clearly cementing themselves as the worst. It's pretty obvious that, you know, they'll finish the worst team in the league. They'll get a 14% chance at one. They won't be able to fall outside the top five. And you just got to get some lottery luck. It's just it's what's got to happen. You got to give yourself a chance. And I think that's what the rebuild's about. So that's an updated look on the tank standings and kind of the outlook there. It's looking pretty good for those that are rooting for the Wizards to tank. In terms of a look ahead, look, the Wizards have lost 12 in a row. Franchise record is 17 games that they've lost in a row. They matched that this year. Also matched it the year before that, but they've never seemed to get past it, which is crazy. And so they've lost 12 in a row.
They have two more legs of this West Coast trip. They're already 0-4 on it. At Phoenix on Saturday, at Dallas on Monday, and then return home for two games against Toronto and against Los Angeles before hitting the road again at Minnesota. Phoenix is going to be a blowout loss. Dallas, another blowout loss. They just won at OKC, so you're crazy if you think they're going to drop one to Washington at home. And then you go home against Toronto on a 14-game losing streak. That's one you can win, but like the Raptors are healthy again. Quickley's back. Barnes is back. RJ Barrett's back. They're healthy and they're playing better basketball. They're a competent team. And so I don't think the Wizards are going to steal that one. Los Angeles is there as well. In terms of a team that just beat Washington by 23, I think they'll come into DC for what will be a home game for the Lakers and all the LeBron stands and the bandwagon Lakers fans, and they'll win that as well. So I think you'll be looking at what would that be, 16 in a row at Minnesota, that's a loss, and then you match it 17 in a row, and then you go against Charlotte on the road. It's the team that you broke the first losing streak against. You got a chance to snap it again, or you could set a franchise record. And if you do, you're at Brooklyn the following night. So that's kind of a look ahead into the Wizards. I think it's for sure going to extend the losing streak to 14 games. Then you'll see if they can beat Toronto. If not, it'll be 16, probably 17 heading into a game with the Charlotte Hornets on the road. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Wizards podcast. You know, talked about the Jimmy Butler trade, just to recap for a bit. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't know what Miami's goals are with Jimmy Butler, if they're going to be petty or if they're just like, we just want to trade him and we'll get whatever we can get, try to recoup assets. I don't know if those assets are player driven, but they're going to have to take back a fat contract anyway, or multiple fat salaries if they want to, you know, move a guy that's making 50 mil like Jimmy Butler is. So I think if that's the three team trade between Miami, Washington, and Phoenix, that's the best each team is probably going to get. And then moving forward, you know, maybe if it's a 4 or 5 team trade, the Wizards can still be a facilitator. I think they got to be. After the debacle of last deadline, the Wizards need to kill this deadline. They need to do well. They need to move these assets and get you know, trade value, trade picks and draft capital and young players and expiring salaries, whatever tanking teams do best. I think the Wizards would be, you know, prudent to kind of have a really good deadline. And I'm sure that's what they want to do. So that's the Butler saga. Kuzma's trade value is in the tank. It's awful. I don't think any first-round picks can be had from any of them unless they're combined in a deal like I had with Beal and Butler. Take back salary. Don't think you can get a first for Kuz. Don't think you can get a first for JV or Brogdon either, maybe a couple seconds. But I think the Wizards will be wise to move on from Kyle and at least look to do the same for Brogdon and for Valanciunas as well. In terms of the Wizards' outlook, they're 6-37. They've lost 12 in a row. That doesn't look to be getting any better anytime soon. Going to be extended to 14-game losing streak after they lose to Phoenix, and if they lose to Dallas, that'll be an 0-6 West Coast trip, which is what everyone expected. And you'll be shocked if they even won one of these games, but that's kind of the reality of Washington. You know, I can't tell you the last time that I was not only moved by a loss, but that I was shocked by one. That I was like, they should have won that game, and I'm actually, you know, upset that they lost it. Because I don't think you're ever going to be upset that they lose a game when they're tanking. But you can be disappointed in their level of play. And I think that's where I'm at and where some Wizards fans are at as well. They can play a lot better, even if they have one of the worst rosters in the league, even if they're a young team. They can have more buy-in on both ends. They can be smarter. They can be better. And I think that falls on Brian Keefe. I don't think he's done the best job of getting them prepared. And I think he'd be the first person to tell you that. So I don't think for the people that say fire Brian Keefe, I think that's a bad move now mid-season. But look, if you reassess it at the end of the year, I don't know if you can look back on this year and really have anything that Brian Keefe holds his hat on as, you know what, I've done this well. Maybe some player development here and there, but there's been a lot of bad. Not all his fault, but if there's better options out there, I think that you got to at least consider moving on from him after, you know, one full season. So that's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate all you guys for listening. Again, if you have any comments on the Beal trade that I had at the start of the show, hit me up, give me a DM, let me know. If you have any trades, please send them to me because I think next week I'm going to try to bring someone on to talk trades. If you have anybody you'd recommend, you'd like me to bring on the show, let me know. I'm always open to have new people on, talk whiz, talk some hoops as well. So again, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. I appreciate, as always, all you guys for listening. Yeah, go Wiz.